Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Yankees and the Mets concluded the Subway Series with a single game last night at Yankee Stadium. Jacob DeGrom was okay, which shows you the kind of year he's had. 6 2/3, 2 runs. Yeah, he's okay. 12 strikeouts, he's okay. But I think the bigger concern was Severino. And joining us right now to talk about it, Ricky Ricardo does a great job with the Yankee broadcast in Espanol, also does the Philadelphia Eagles. And I was talking about this on the air earlier, Ricky. I thought that you overtook Yes, because I turned on Yes on Saturday, and I heard you calling the game, and Dove informed me that I probably pressed the SAP button. But I enjoyed your work. I listened to the last three innings of the game, Ricky.
Well, I appreciate that, Evan. You should make that mistake more often. Hit that button, baby.
I think I am, because it does two things. Number one, my in-laws speak Spanish, so I think they enjoyed it. I think they enjoyed, you know, hearing it. And for me, I'm going to learn. You know, I'm listening to you. It's like I told the story earlier, and I think a lot of players have done it. A lot of Spanish-speaking players will listen to just English-speaking TV, and that's how they learn the language. Wilmer Flores said he watched Friends. If I watch every Yankee game in Espanol, by next year, I'm going to be broadcasting the game with you, Ricky.
You can use me as a learning tool, Evan. And it's the language of baseball in Espanol. It's the same rhythm. That's why some people like to call me Juan Sterling. So you can follow along. You'll be just fine.
Well, at the end of the game, because it was Chapman was struggling. It was the Saturday game, and he ends it with a strikeout. And I'm trying to remember. I think you gave me a victory. Can you tell what was it? Because I want to make sure I got it right.
That's a Victoria. It's a victory.
All there right. See, I knew that. That was very good. I enjoyed it. Why is Luis Severino struggling over his last seven starts in your mind?
You know what? Last night I was commenting this with my partner on the air. The velocity is down. I mean, Luis Severino, during those first 3 months of the season when he was lights out, all the way up to that Sunday night game on July 1st against the Red Sox, you're talking about first inning, coming out of the bullpen. First inning was throwing 98, 99, and was continuing to hit 99. And he would hit 100 in the sixth, seventh inning as he was getting towards the end of the night. You know how to measure a pitcher these days. It's not like in years past, Evan. Now you see a guy at 94 pitches, 95 pitches, getting close to 100. You know he's about to come out of the game. It doesn't matter, you know, how well he's pitching or what the situation of the game is. It's just the way we play baseball today. He would hit 99 and 100 at pitch 98, pitch 102, for example. He was still throwing pure gas. It's not that way anymore. For the last month, Severino's been in the mid-90s. His velocity, from what I was able to count last night, was down about 3 to 4 miles an hour from the get-go and didn't have command of that breaking ball. When you see some of the replays, after, you know, in our broadcast booth, for example, the home run gets hit, there Rosario hits it or Nimmo, whoever it may be was, you know, getting the home runs. But against Severino, that breaking ball was just hanging in the middle of the plate, wasn't spinning very much. I think personally, and he'll never admit to this because I've asked Severino personally off to the side in private, are you okay physically? Are you just tired? Have you hit a wall? He denies everything.
Right.
To speak to Severino, there is nothing wrong. It's just a matter of, like he says, continuing to work and continuing to work at his craft. But here was a guy that was working hard as it was up until that 11-1 win against the Red Sox on the Sunday night, July the 1st. It wasn't that he was working any more or any less before that night, but you can tell that his pitches aren't as crisp. The breaking pitches aren't moving like they used to be. They don't have the bite that they had before, and the velocity's down. And that fastball, I mean, no one could convince me that fastball is the same that it was prior to – to this slide here.
It's tough because I try to pay attention to the gun to see where the velocity is. I thought it felt like it was not late in the game, because you're right about that. Late in the game, Severino used to pull a Verlander where he would pump up that last pitch at 99, maybe even hit triple digits. It felt like the velocity was similar, but it's tough to know because some of these guns that are used are all over the place. So and what's the difference between a mile an hour or 2 miles an hour? Like, that's the other thing I'm not positive about.
Well, there's a certain zip. You know, Earl Weaver years ago used to say about Jim Palmer that his fastball had an extra gear as it was getting to the plate. It had that little extra giddy up right when it was getting to the batter. Severino had that little extra gear on his fastball all season long. I don't see that in Severino's fastball. There's not that little extra zoom that comes right in there as it's about to hit the catcher's mitt. That's lacking. If there's something wrong, either it's a dead arm period, I don't know if there's something physically in the rest of his body, because I do notice, Evan, that something in his delivery is not as tight and wound up as he is, or was anyway,
right,
for the first 3 months of the season. I just see his mechanics is a little bit looser. I'm trying to find, to see if I can reach out to one of his mentors in Pedro Martinez, because he watches him very, very closely, and I would love to get an assessment, you know, from Pedro to see if Severino's mechanics are the same as it was. I'm going to pull some replays and watch Severino's mechanics the first 3 months of the season as compared to what I'm seeing in these last 7-8 starts, because I just think that it's not as tight as he is winding up, even out of the stretch. It seems like that left shoulder is a little bit open. And look, I'm not a pitching coach. I'm not a doctor. Don't play one on the radio or TV. But to my eye, I can just see there's a difference in his release point. There's something mechanically a little bit off. And it just could be that the young guy has a tired arm. And hopefully he'll get over it and get a second win for the last 6 weeks of the season.
It's tough to know because there's no track record. So Chris Sale has this track record of wearing down late in the year. So the Red Sox have made a conscious effort to keep his innings down. They put him on the DL to miss a start. He comes out of it, pitches 5 innings, strikes out a million different guys. Last year, I was mentioning this earlier, and it's, again, there's very little sample size here. Last year, Severino got better as the season went on. It was the complete opposite of what we've seen so far this year with him.
Yeah, no, he did. Remember, he had some struggles, in postseason.
Yeah, the wild card game, sure.
And going back a couple of years, he did run out of gas. Now, this guy is filling out physically. When Luis Severino first got to the majors, he was very thin. You know, he is physically building out here, and I don't think he's finished growing yet. So we're watching the maturation of the young man, period, of the person itself, and not just the pitcher. But no, I definitely think either he's got a dead arm, he's just hit a wall, or there's a combination of that and maybe some mechanical flaws that, you know, look, there's no one better than Larry Rothschild to pick up on some of these things. And the one thing I can't tell you about Luis Severino is he's not going to take anything for granted. He's going to get there early. He's going to watch video. He's going to break himself down along with Larry and everyone else that helps him out. And he will try to get to the bottom of this, but it's definitely not the same Severino we saw the first 3 months.
What I liked about Severino last night is that, you know, he's talking to the media, and he's not making any excuses. You mentioned earlier, he's not saying he's tired. He's not saying he's hurt. He's just saying, I got to figure it out. So he's standing there answering these questions after his seventh. I know his last start before this was pretty good, but really it's been this seven-start run where he hasn't been the same guy. And he's taking accountability for it, saying he's got to figure it out.
No, absolutely. He's a man's man, Evan. He's not going to look for excuses. But the one thing you can tell, one sign about Severino is there are several at-bats last night where people keep fouling pitches off left and right, and they make him work. His pitch count was up in the high 40s into the 50s in the third inning, he was already – basically halfway through what his start was going to be. If 100 pitches is the norm today in baseball, and you've got a guy who's at pitch 48, pitch 52, pitch 55, and he still hasn't gotten out of the second inning, well, then you know, look, this guy, unless he's got a quick 1-2-3 inning in the third or fourth, he's not going to get by the fourth inning. But some of these Met hitters last night, and I have watched this now for the last month and a half, they're fouling everything he throws up there. He might get into an 0-2 count, have a hitter on the ropes at 1-2, and guys just keep fouling balls off.
Yeah.
There aren't as many swings and misses against Severino as we saw the first 3 months. And then he doesn't put guys away. They continue there at bat.
Yeah. And, you know, what's so crazy is that normally we'd say, all right, the Yankees have to go to the bullpen in the fifth inning. It's not the end of the world. They have this incredibly deep bullpen. I'm looking at it last night. Outside of Dellin Betances, I don't know how many guys I trust in that bullpen right now with the way they've been pitching lately. Chad Green has struggled. A.J. Cole's come back to earth. Robertson's been up and down. Britton, I don't know what the heck's going on with him. He had another shaky inning when he came in the ninth inning. And Chapman's gotten through it. But he hasn't made things easy. So all of a sudden, this strength, this Yankee bullpen, has a lot of questions right now with the way most guys are pitching.
Every one of those guys that you mentioned is struggling. You know, and you've got to think about the mentality. Remember, you've got a bunch of ex-closers. When you talk about David Robertson, he was a closer with the White Sox. You talk about Zach Britton, he was a closer with the Orioles. Are we sure, are we positive that these ex-closers, you know, can adjust to coming in the sixth, seventh inning? You know, and not miss a beat. You know, I'm not so sure that these guys aren't programmed to do one thing very, very well. And when you tell a guy like Zach Britton to come in a game where the team is behind, you know, this is the guy that was coming in high-pressure situations for these last couple of years. David Robertson, the same, was a closer with the Yankees before he signed the free agent contract with the White Sox. All of a sudden, the roles have changed. And I get that the way we play the game has changed also. But still, for a guy that was shutting people down in the ninth inning just a couple of years ago to now be brought in the sixth inning, seventh inning, maybe you might be behind in the game or you might be 5-6 runs ahead, but, you know, the starter is done because it's 100 pitches. There are different roles, and I'm just not so sure it's as easy as it looks to have guys make those kind of adjustments.
Maybe. We're talking to Ricky Ricardo, does the Yankees in Espanol. Let's get to a positive here, because I think one guy who's really stepped up since Aaron Judge has gone down is Miguel Andujar. And I think he's taken full command of this American League Rookie of the Year award. I think he's passed by Gleyber Torres, who struggled. I know he's had his defensive issues. He hits another home run last night. How about what this guy's been able to do offensively, specifically since Judge went down? Because you look at his numbers, he's hitting a home run every other game, basically. He's getting two hits a night. He's getting extra base hits. The guy's been great offensively.
Miguel Andujar, you know, took it personally. Andujar, I should say it correctly.
Andujar.
Shame on me.
Yes.
Miguel Andujar, you know, really took it personal. The error late in that Sunday night game in Fenway Park. You know, and he's been good. He's been consistent all year. But this guy takes his craft very, very seriously. He's a very spiritual guy. He had his head down after that, the fourth game, the error that he committed throwing to first that Bird couldn't scoop up at Fenway. He's been trying to atone for that error since that night, and he has picked his game up with the bat. Now, he's had the struggles with the glove, okay, and I still see him, you know, hesitate sometimes when he throws to second. Maybe, you know, men on first and second, a ground ball comes to him. He's still thinking a little bit before, well, should I throw to second? Should I go to first? You know, he's got that kind of sidearm delivery that he throws to the bases with, which scares the heck out of me because, you know, you don't really have a true throw to the chest of the first baseman from Miguel Andujar ever. You know, the way he throws the ball coming, it's almost like a sidearm submarine throw across the bag, across the diamond. So his defense still is a little bit shaky. But what he can control is his bat. And I tell you, just talking to him since that night in Fenway, when he really put it on his shoulders about that Yankee loss, much of it he took personally. He has gotten, you know, some of that weight off of his shoulders with the bat. He's just been magnificent. With Gleyber Torres' slump coming out of that stint on the disabled list, and I think Gleyber's still not 100% yet coming off that injury. But right now, as you mentioned, Andujar, I think, has taken the lead. I think he has passed Torres.
Yes.
As far as the Rookie of the Year is concerned. And if the Yankees intend to have Andujar play third base in the future and not go after a certain double M that's with the Dodgers right now, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Then they're going to have to work. In the offseason, he is really going to have to work on his defense because it's shaky. But they have got a hitter where, I don't know, can they put him somewhere else? They've got a bat in that lineup in Miguel Andujar for years to come, because this kid really, really takes his game serious.
Oh, yeah, he is some hitter. What are you hearing about why the Yankees have hesitated to call up Justice Sheffield? Because every time I check his box score, the guy's throwing five innings. He's allowing one run. He's pitching really well. He's pitched really well now for a month and a half. Are you hearing anything about why he's not getting the call, especially with an opportunity coming up this week?
Same thing that you've been hearing, that Sweeney's been hearing. You know, the organization's line has been that they've been concerned about his strikeout to walk ratio and not having, you know, command of some of those secondary pitches, that he's just not quite ready yet. I don't know when, you know, the quite ready moment is going to be. I would have thought that maybe with Sabathia going on the disabled list, that this would be the time. And look, let's face it, Evan, they're 10 back in the division. Now, I know they've got both the Oakland A's and the Seattle Mariners breathing down their necks for the wild card, so it's no time to just, you know, experiment with someone. But Luis Sessa, Justice Sheffield, is there really that big of a difference between these two guys? Is Sessa that much more polished to come up and make a start than Justice Sheffield? I would have thought maybe with the Sabathia injury, that left-hander for left-hander, it would be Sheffield's turn, but obviously I was wrong about that, too.
And the other thing that would appeal to me about calling him up is, how many times have we seen a team, it's happened with the Yankees, where you call up a prospect in August or September, and all of a sudden they make such an impact and help you go on a run. We've seen it with pitchers. We've seen it with hitters. We saw it with Jabba out of the bullpen, David Price for Tampa Bay. Miguel Cabrera was a kid when the Marlins called him up. Frankie Rodriguez back in the day with the Angels, K-Rod. There's so many examples of it. That would draw me in if I'm the Yankees. And what? Who knows what this guy's capable of doing if you call him?
No one's ever seen him yet. You know, and with young pitchers, you know, if they come in and they throw strikes, it takes the league a couple of times around maybe to catch up and create a so-called book on him. And you know, he can sneak up on some people and give you, you know, a few starts where you know, he might just surprise you. So yeah, I'm just as shocked that they haven't pulled the trigger on bringing him up yet.
We'll see, Ricky. Thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thursday, I will be in Foxborough.
Oh.
For the Super Bowl rematch.
The rematch.
At least the first three series of the game, anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not going to last very long, but still, enjoy it. It's football, man. It's been eight months we've been waiting.
I'll be at the Gillette Stadium to watch Nate Sudfeld, the great Eagle quarterback, Nate Sudfeld, take on the Pats.
Will Sam Darnold start week one for the Jets, in your mind?
I hope so. Absolutely. Why not? He's the guy.
We'll see. I'm still drawn in by the idea of Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, this guy was a Pro Bowler a couple of years ago. I don't mind having a quarterback sit and wait and learn and collect information. But, hey, if Sam Darnold's going to outplay everybody, then God bless him. Play him.
If Sam Darnold can be to the Jets what I watched Carson Wentz become to the Eagles,
you
throw him to the fire, and if he is as good as advertised, which I think he is, then he can be to the Jets what Wentz was to the Eagles, and use Teddy Bridgewater to get a draft.
And it's fine if Sam's going to get hurt and then his backup's going to come in and help the Jets win a Super Bowl. I will sign for that if that's what happens in 2019.
I'll see you at the parade.
Yes. Thank you, Ricky.
You got it.
Ricky Ricardo also calls the Philadelphia Eagles as well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.